Well, it seems like just about everyone has had a knee problem at some point, and sometimes surgery is the answer, but not all the time. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller. Our guests today are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. They join us every month to answer your physical therapy questions. We're going to talk a little bit about knee injuries today and what PT can and can't do for them. Have you had a PT or have you had physical therapy for a knee injury? Did it help you avoid surgery? You can join the conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on our Facebook page, The Larry Mueller Show. Well, welcome back, Lori and Jill. Good to see you guys.
Awesome. Great to be here.
And so before we go anywhere, what are those marks on Michael Phelps' body?
we figured we'd be spending some considerable amount of time talking about the cupping that Michael Phelps and numerous other Olympians are displaying, for lack of a better term. And those are a consequence of a treatment technique called cupping. And it's actually a very old art. Many acupuncturists and other healthcare professionals have used cupping for a very long time. And the most traditional way it's performed is there's a cup made out of glass, or it can be bamboo, something like that, and they actually heat the inside of it. They use a match and heat it. Then they put that on your skin, and that creates a suction. And so what it does is it kind of pulls the skin up into the cup, if you will. Depending on how long you leave it there, you can actually get kind of increased blood flow to the area and some capillary damage. And then what you see is that red mark. Now, more modern cupping devices use suction. So we have a cupping set, you call them, in the athletic training room where I work. We've done cupping for many, many years. It's not really new. It's just come to the forefront because, of course, all-star Michael Phelps is wearing those lovely little dots. But it uses suction. So there's a little air gun you attach to it, and it just pulls the skin up.
Okay.
So it can be used for multiple things. One of the ways I personally like to use it is to increase mobility along a scar. So if someone's had surgery, for example, even on their knee, and we always know we need to mobilize that scar so it doesn't stick or adhere to the skin and the muscles below it, you can kind of mobilize the skin up and down and side to side, but sometimes you just feel like you need to pick that skin up. And so this is one of the ways you can do that, is with a cupping set. So that's one way that we actually use it in the athletic training room, is to kind of increase scar mobility. You can use it to increase fascial mobility. So some people use it kind of as a myofascial stretch. And then there are people who keep the cups on for a prolonged period of time. And that's when you see that increased blood pooling and the capillary breakage that Michael Phelps is demonstrating.
So, you know, the bottom line is, though, there's no research that's been done on it. It's something that's been brought to us from some of the alternative medicine community, massage, acupuncture, and so on. That's not to say that it's not effective, but to say that we don't have any science that says it will produce this outcome. So it certainly makes sense that with the suction, it could loosen up a scar tissue. But you have to think about it, that it doesn't just pick up the skin.
Right.
You know, it will pick up all layers below the skin. And there are multiple layers of skin, subcutaneous fat, fascia, and so on. It's going to pick it all up. So it's not necessarily going to give you a glide or slide between those layers, but it's going to pull them all up and probably stimulate some of the local joint receptors or skin tactile receptors too, which makes it feel good.
So is this something people should be concerned about, who's doing this to them? I mean, can it be dangerous?
I would definitely suggest that the healthcare practitioner that you're seeing, whether it be, like Lori said, an acupuncturist or a massage therapist or a physical therapist, understands kind of the side effects and the indications for why you would choose to do cupping. You certainly just don't want to do cupping on anything. I would never do cupping on an acute injury. I would never do cupping where there's like an open sore or an open wound. So you definitely want to make sure that your healthcare practitioner understands kind of the indications and contraindications of it. Having said that, anybody can buy a cupping set on Amazon for about $35.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
so just it's just one of those things you really need the buyer to beware.
Okay. Great information. Well, now that we've got that out of the way, let's go back to talking about those knee injuries. So if someone has a problem with their knee, what action should they be taking?
Well, there's that's a very broad question.
Yes, it is.
So, you know, if they had an acute injury, you know, and you're able to walk on it, maybe you twisted it, maybe it's a little swollen, you know, you ice on it, you try to move it, you know, assess it over 12 to 24 hours. And if you're having a lot of pain or a lot of acute swelling, then you need to see someone and have it evaluated. So typically ice is what we do early on. And then depending upon what an exam shows, then we triage from there.
Okay. So they should go to their general practitioner kind of thing?
Well, they could see a family physician, or in most places, in the state of Wisconsin, for example, you have direct access to physical therapy. In other words, you do not need a referral to see a physical therapist, except under the exception of an acute fracture. If we saw a patient that had an acute fracture that we had not been diagnosed, then it would be referred to a physician.
Sure.
So depending upon who your insurance is with, you right. can call the clinic or call the office where you see your health care provider and explain the situation. And they will usually have a triage nurse who will discuss the case with you and help determine whether or not you need to be to have a radiograph, whether you need to see a physician, whether you can go directly to physical therapy.
Okay. So in your experience, what types of knee injuries usually benefit from physical therapy instead of maybe going like into a surgery?
Well, I think the first line of the first kind of broad category where physical therapists can be incredibly helpful is that category of microtrauma or overuse. So people who don't remember one specific mechanism of injury, but they had their pain come on with kind of a gradual, slow onset. The runner who develops this kind of insidious knee pain, if you will. Many times that's a biomechanical cause, and that's something that physical therapists are considered the movement experts. So that is something that patients can greatly benefit from seeing a physical therapist for. So with a microtrauma or what we call an overuse injury, physical therapy has a lot to offer.
And also for people who have arthritis. So, you know, they're in the absence of a knee replacement, physical therapy is the number one intervention for people with arthritis. So getting stronger, increasing the mobility of that joint, increasing the mobility of adjacent joints, increasing core strength, all go to improving function and decreasing pain. There's been numerous studies that have verified that.
Okay. Our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW Madison. Do you have a physical therapy question? Please give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email at talk@wpr.org. Let's go to a caller right now, John in Wausau. Hi, John.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Well, what's your question?
Well, I'm really happy that you've got these wonderful guests on today, because I have a question that's just come up. I have shoulder impingement on both my shoulders. And on my right shoulder, which has been giving me particular problems, I have what the doctor said is calcium deposits in the rotator tendon.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And so I went through, and I also had a broken wrist on my right hand. So once that was isolated, and I'm a pianist, once that was out of the cast, I, of course, couldn't. I'd been moving my arms differently for 6 weeks
yep,
or whatever.
Exactly.
And I was a wreck. And I just sort of got over the wrist trauma. I'm still working that out. But as a result, it's really sort of exacerbated the situation with my right shoulder. And I went through like 6 hours of physical therapy with a wonderful therapist because I didn't think anything would work. But it seemed to work. And then all of a sudden, it seemed to get a lot worse. And then I went and had a massage because she recommended a deep tissue massage. Maybe that would help. She said I was so tight. And she said I was kind of ape-like. I was hunched over, and my shoulders are forward, and, you know, sort of, you know, not ideal posture, and I've always been aware of it. And so I got the massage, And then after the massage, I have been in agony for like 2 weeks. I called the doctor. He can't give me any more cortisone shots because it hasn't been 4 months. And the nurse said, well, are you taking ibuprofen or anything? And I said, no. She said, you might want to do that. So I started taking it. I really don't like to take that stuff, but it has really helped a lot. And I'm wondering, is there any way to avoid surgery? Is there something I can do? Or is that just going to get worse? Is that there's no way to break up the calcium from what I've been told. I just don't know what to do, and I don't want to be,
right,
you know, in a cast,
right,
for 6 months.
Right, right. No. You are far away from a surgery yet, at least in my opinion. I'll let Jill weigh in,
because
I'm sure she has something
to
say.
Yes,
she's got an opinion.
Yes,
I can tell
I
by
agree.
The look on her face.
I agree.
But the next thing that comes to mind is the question of whether or not anyone has looked at your neck. So I know you have the shoulder problem. And sometimes when you see the shoulder problem and you see the calcium and you have shoulder pain, you go, oh, yeah, that's coming from your shoulder. But you went and got this massage and, you know, all theoretically, you should feel better after a massage. The fact that you feel worse makes me wonder what else is going on. And when you talk about your posture, and I think of you playing the piano, mm-hmm, and you're being kyphotic or round-shouldered, it makes me think that you may have a neck component. So apparently you had some sort of a trauma that was significant enough to fracture your wrist and jammed your shoulder. So I'm wondering if anyone has examined your neck.
Well, and interestingly, when he started the phone call, he said he had impingement in both shoulders.
In both shoulders,
which makes,
yeah,
us think it might be some sort of central phenomenon.
Central, yeah.
So, but just to back up for a second, for our listeners who don't know what calcific tendonitis is, it's when you actually lay down calcium in the tendon. So where there's supposed to be soft tissue, you actually lay down a hard, bony substance. And I'm going to tell you right now, it's very memorable. I had a female patient who had delivered 6 children without medication, and mm-hmm, she told me that childbirth times 6 without medication was less painful than calcific tendonitis.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently it can be very painful.
Yeah, my.
So it can be very, yeah, painful and very debilitating. You can imagine if you have some a hard, mm-hmm, lump somewhere where you're not supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
So, but I agree with Lori, that could almost be an incidental finding, and looking at your neck and making sure that this is not coming from your neck because you have these bilateral symptoms would be a good idea.
Right, and working on your posture. So if you're a pianist and you've had this bad posture for a long time, it can take a long time to undo this. So I would stick with this. And you did get good results initially from therapy. And I don't know why the wheels came off at a certain point in time. Someone would need to talk with you further and look at you to see, come up with some theory as to why you came unhinged at that point. But the fact that you got better suggests that you can get better again. So I wouldn't head to surgery yet.
Well, the other thing you have to think about, if we did have this terrible wrist injury, even if he's back to playing his piano, if he's not getting all of his wrist range of motion,
yeah,
he's going to start
compensating
at his shoulder.
Yep.
So that could have flared up his shoulder,
yeah,
as well.
Exactly.
So they're definitely interrelated,
yep,
John.
There's a lot going on.
All right. Well, good luck, John. We appreciate your call. Our guests are Lori Tyne-Brody and Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum. Lori's a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And Jill's an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up at 2 o'clock today, Kathleen Dunn and her guest will talk about the Civilian Conservation Corps and the huge role that it played in helping to establish parks and forests throughout Wisconsin. Right now, we're talking about physical therapy, and our lines are open, so please give us a call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can send us an email to talk@wpr.org. And we did get an email from Todd in Delavan. He said he's 53 years old and slipped on the stairs. He stopped himself with his fall with his left hand and basically jammed his shoulder. He's had pain ever since, and sometimes more than others. He's having trouble sleeping on the shoulder, but he hasn't gone to see a doctor because he thought it would heal itself. Any suggestion?
Well, yeah. I don't know how long ago this happened, but you know, if you're not better in a couple days, then you need to see somebody, because a fall like that and a jam up into your shoulder, you know, it's a classic for tearing your rotator cuff. So he could have torn his rotator cuff. He could have inflamed his rotator cuff. And there's a bursa that sits between the ball on the top of your shoulder and then the bone above it, a little bursa that sits in there. And when you have that force that goes up through your arm, it pinches that bursa in between those two bones, and that can aggravate it. You can get a bursitis, and classically it gives you night pain. So he should go in and see somebody.
Absolutely, I agree. You know, the older we are, the longer it takes to heal.
That's very tactful.
Thank you. Yeah. Since you're my older sister.
Yeah, thanks. I just giving you an opening for that. Just yes, get it out of the way. Yeah. Right. Okay. Up front.
It's out of the way.
Check. Gone.
It's out of the way. I do have a birthday present for you sitting over there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah.
But as we age, it takes longer for those tendons to heal, and they're also much more brittle. Our tendons and our muscles are much more brittle, so they're much more vulnerable to tears. So I definitely agree with Lori. It would be worth his time to get that checked out. Let's see what's going on with that rotator cuff and then develop a course of care for him.
And not unlike our first caller, John, the more times you repeat this cycle of inflammation, you know, you annoy the tendon, you get it aggravated, and then you do something that it calms down again, and then you do something to re-aggravate. Every time you go through that cycle, you lay down a little more calcium. The tendon becomes a little more brittle. It heals with scar tissue. Scar tissue is not as compliant as your normal tissue. So every time you go through that cycle, it becomes more likely to be re-injured, gets aggravated more easily. So you don't want to walk around with a sore shoulder for months waiting for it to get better.
Okay. Well, good luck with that, Todd. Let's go to the phones. Sue in Milwaukee, what do you have for our guests?
Hi, I have a question. I'm wondering if I have a chip in a bone or a ligament or a tear in a meniscus, how would physical therapy be helpful for me?
So by a chip in your bone, are you saying you have kind of a loose body in your knee joint?
I have a bad meniscus and some arthritis in my knees, but in the past I had a chip in some parts of my ankle that I had surgery on, and I also had some surgery on my shoulder. So they want to try physical therapy on my knees now, and I'm just wondering how is that going to help?
Sure. That's a great question. So many people will end up with small tears or micro tears in their meniscus. And depending on where they are in the meniscus, some of those can heal on their own. Part of the meniscus has a blood supply. So depending on where those tears are, your tears could actually heal without having to remove your meniscus. And you want to keep your meniscus as long as is humanly possible, because it basically serves as a pillow or a cushion between your knee joint, which is the joint between the two longest bones you have in your body. So we like to preserve our meniscus as long as possible. So doing things that keep your range of motion adequate, that give you really good strength in the muscles that surround your knee, and do everything we can to create a nice healing environment are highly recommended. And the way the meniscus heals is through basically what we call a fluid pump or nutrition going back and forth. So bending and straightening your knee without a lot of load on it, such as a stationary bike, is one of the ideal ways to kind of promote that healing process.
And then the other way is by weight bearing.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, there's the pool.
Yeah. It's loading and unloading. So right. Walking. That's why people with arthritis do better walking than standing, because that fluid pump that Jill just described works best when you step down on it and kind of squeeze that fluid out of the pump, and then you unweight it, and then it sort of sucks it back in, for lack of a better term. So that pump works really well when you're walking and alternating. So if you have to stand, shifting your weight is better than static standing. But the key is, in physical therapy, we try to normalize your movement patterns, because like our pianist, you change how you do things to accommodate that pain or your loss of motion. And what that does is it changes the loading pattern across your joint, and that can be hard on your joint. So that's one thing we do. Then secondly, there's abundant research that shows that strengthening the muscles that absorb shock every time you take a step takes the stress off of your knee joint itself. So if your muscles are not working efficiently and effectively, every time you take a step, every time you go up or down the stairs, you're putting more of your body weight across your joint surface and not in the muscles. So the muscles aren't working to offload your knee.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for the call, Sue. We appreciate that. Let's go to Michelle. She's in Mount Horeb. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. And I just have a question about, I'm a runner. I've been running for about 35 years and actually without injury, which is kind of amazing to me.
It is. It's great.
For the past several years, though, and I would say this has been going on for maybe 4 years, I'll get up in the morning with, like, excruciating pain in my feet, and then I'll take a few steps and kind of stretch, and then it sort of goes away. And it was just, I don't know why I didn't figure it out sooner, but after about 3 years, I was like, oh, this is like plantar fasciitis. And when I run, sometimes it really hurts when I start running. And after about a mile, I'm fine. I don't notice it at all. It's just getting through that first mile. But the pain is on the back, like that bony protrusion right on the back of my heel. That's, and somebody suggested that wasn't plantar fasciitis.
No, it's not. It's not plantar fasciitis.
Okay.
So
it's probably either insertional Achilles tendonitis or retrocalcaneal bursitis.
Yeah, one of the two. Is it right on the bone? Do you have a bump back there?
There's a bump back there. And that's, yeah, that's like if I touch it, that hurts.
Yeah, that's an insertional Achilles insertional tendonitis. So, yeah, a couple things. It's a good stretching program for your Achilles. Looking at your gait, I mean, it depends upon how far you want to go. You can start with an eccentric Achilles program and stretching your Achilles, and maybe a little donut pad. Do the shoes rub there? Does it hurt? Do you have a, when you look on the inside of the back of your shoe, is there a wear pattern where that bump is?
Not really.
Okay.
No.
Good.
And it really feels like, yeah, it feels like something almost wrapping around my heel that hurts. I don't see like a red spot where
okay.
that.
Okay. All right.
Good. Yeah, I would definitely say it sounds like it's insertional Achilles tendonitis or tendinosis. And so to do eccentrics, like Lori talked about, you would put both feet on the stair with just kind of the balls of your foot on the stairs. You'd let your heels drop below the stairs. And then you would lift yourself up with both feet. So you go up on your toes with both feet. Then just lift one leg out of the way and lower yourself back down to that starting position with just one foot. So we call it up with two, down with one. And that'll work your calf muscle eccentrically. And we know from research that eccentric contractions are what's most helpful when you have a tendinopathy per se.
Right.
The other thing is, you know, you say it's excruciating in the morning. My best guess is you're sleeping in that plantar flex position with your toes kind of pointed and your Achilles tendon in a shortened position. So typically we suggest night splints for people with plantar fasciitis, but this would be a case where I'd put her in night splints for her Achilles tendonitis.
Yep.
So I'd probably get some night slips, blah, night splints.
and I would get a night splint that you fit on the front of your ankle, because you're probably not going to like that pressure on the back of your ankle. So there's two styles of night splints. There's one that goes behind your leg and behind your heel and under your foot, and one that goes on top. I get the one on top.
Yeah, it's called a dorsal splint.
A dorsal splint, yeah.
Okay. I would start with that.
And the stretching.
That would be a really good first line of defense. And then as Lori said, if that's not turning the corner for her, then you could always have a running analysis done. I know you live close to Madison, so there's running biomechanists here in town that would look at your gait. It's interesting after 35 years how this just started, though. So maybe something's changed.
Well, something's changed. And, you know, as you said earlier, as we get older, our muscles and tendons get stiffer. So it may not be limiting your running now, but it's telling you it's going to. So it's a good thing you called when you did.
All right. Well, thank you, Michelle. Appreciate that. Let's go to Carrie in Black River Falls. Hi, Carrie.
Good morning. I have a question. I just wanted to ask your guests if they had any resources of information, short of going into a doctor or physical therapist. I'm 53 years old, and I have been diagnosed with having advanced osteoarthritis in both of my hips. So I have a lot of hip issues and knee issues, desperately trying to avoid hip replacements, especially given my age. I think I'm fairly young for that, but my mobility is getting compromised and things. But I'm wondering about, I know that exercise is key and crucial. Any websites or anything you go to for even just like stationary exercise, exercises you can do in your home without having to march yourself off to a physical therapist or a class things that are easy and convenient to help keep yourself as limber as you can, understanding that nothing can really reverse it.
Sure. I think a really good resource for you is the Arthritis Foundation. They have a very nice website, and the aquatic-based courses called Gentle Joints are certified, if you will, through the Arthritis Foundation. So I would Google Arthritis Foundation, and I'm sure they have kind of pages or handouts for home activities.
Yeah, that's a simple one. And you live in
Black River Falls.
So I'm sure there are resources in your community as well. Your hospital, your local hospital or clinic may have information or classes that they have to educate you. For example, the hospital here, we have classes on falls. We have classes on all different kinds of things. And you can attend a class for 1 or 2 days and learn things that you can do at home. And like I said, Jill said, the water classes are really good. But even your local, again, health center may offer some water classes that aren't necessarily through the Arthritis Foundation, but are good quality classes. In general, it's going to be better to have more variety in your program. So sometimes people have this program of, you know, I do these 6 things every day, but they do the same 6 things. And for people with arthritis, you need a lot of variety. You need moving different directions. You need moving different ways, different body parts, and so on, so that loads are distributed across your body in different ways, not the same loading pattern over and over. So it's the same thing. We have people come in and they say, well, I walk every day. And I say, well, that's awesome, but you're loading your body the exact same way every day. You need to load your body differently. So an educational class might help you as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Thank you, Carrie. Let's go to Iola. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
What do you have for us?
Well, I've had some knee pain. I had an injury in January, just hyperextended. Dog ran into my knee. And I wonder about the diagnostic procedure, because my physical therapist thinks that it's either a torn or compromised ACL or PCL, and that we can heal it with physical therapy. And so we talked about MRI, and I wonder about CAT scans, and I wonder how you would actually see what might be wrong in there. I did have an X-ray, and it was diagnosed with arthritis. But she and I both think that it's worse than that, that it's something different than that.
Well, yeah, especially since you had that mechanism of injury. I never had the appreciation for how devastating having a dog run into your knee could be until mine did. And I have a small dog. I can't imagine having a big dog bounding at you and have you hyperextend your knee. So I have an appreciation for that. So the question is, what are the best diagnostics for testing an ACL or PCL? The actual clinical examination, the special tests that physical therapists know how to do to test for a torn ACL and PCL are actually pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. They have good sensitivity and specificity. So as long as your physical therapist has performed those correctly, they're probably fairly accurate. If you are going to go down the path of imaging, kind of the gold standard is an MRI. Mm-hmm. So I would definitely, if you're concerned about that, I would go the path of an MRI to see exactly what's going on with those ligaments.
Yep, and whoever's doing the MRI needs to know what you're looking for, because mm-hmm. they do specific sequences looking for different soft tissues. But it'd be good to know what is going on in your knee. And as Jill said, the clinical exam is very good. But sometimes it can be hard to tell. For example, you may have a complete tear of one and a partial tear of the other. Or you could have some meniscal damage, which can mimic some other things. And so it's nice to know, so you know what you're rehabilitating, whether you're focusing on stability or in which direction you're focusing on stability.
Right.
So, that was January, and it's a hyperextension.
Yes,
I'd get it imaged at this point so that you can head the right direction.
Right.
Okay. Good luck, Amy. Let's go to Judy. She's in Mount Sterling. Hi, Judy.
Hi. Your timing is excellent, and I'm so happy I tuned in.
Well, we are too.
After weeks of what seemed like sciatic pain, sometimes alternating from left to right and sometimes both legs, this past Friday, I had some X-rays done. I was told that in my lower back, a disc has disappeared. Mm. I don't know where it went.
I hate when that happens.
Oh, goodness.
Anyway, that vertebrae apparently is shifting at will, and that's what causes the pain to be very unpredictable. My doctor said there wasn't anything that could be done except possibly a back brace and a Novocaine patch, which Medicare and insurance won't pay for. She said she would do a referral to a specialist who would probably recommend exercise. And I'm thinking, really?
Oh, really? Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Really?
Really? Yeah.
Okay, well, we have a consensus.
Yes, yes,
really
we do.
Exercise.
Consensus, yeah. That's, you know, again, that's physical therapy. So it's not unlike the knee. You know, your back is a series of joints, and we were just talking with the last caller about the meniscus, or the caller before that, about the meniscus, which provides a cushion between the two longest bones in your body. Well, your disc kind of provides a cushion between the two adjacent bones in your back. So what do we do in physical therapy? First of all, we look at your posture, we look at your strength, we look at your mobility, and we make sure that you're moving in the most efficient ways. Typically, the reason a level of a disc, in your case of the disappearing disc, is because however you're moving, you're overloading a specific segment of your spine. For whatever reason, and that's what a physical therapist will do. They'll examine how you move to see why it is that that segment's being overloaded, and then they'll prescribe some specific exercises to improve your posture, to increase the strength in your hips so that you don't overload your back when you get in and out of a car and on and off the toilet and in and out of the shower and things like that. So they specialize in looking at where you've lost motion and helping you improve motion there, and where you've lost strength and increasing strength there, so that you can move in ways that don't put so much stress on that segment of your back.
The other thing is unloading might help you, and that would be in the pool. Yeah. So that would be a really nice place for you to kind of unload, because that disc is no longer unloading that mm-hmm. joint space. And so the pool water can actually help support you or unload that space.
Right. And then thereafter, mm-hmm. many times your pain is less. So mm-hmm. then you can move better and function better at home.
And do some land-based exercises.
Exactly. Oh, wow.
Yep. All right. Well, good luck, Judy, and start that exercise. They mean it. Our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Jill is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow at this time, we talk with the author of the book, Come Let Me Guide You, about her experiences with her guide dog. That starts at 11:45. Hope you can join us. Right now, we're taking your physical therapy questions. We do have a line open. The number is 1-800-642-1234. And of course, you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. And speaking of emails, Cam emailed to say that about 20 years ago, she dislocated both knees wrestling in high school. Usually it's fine, but some days, especially after working too hard, it hurts pretty bad and feels shaky. Now, normally it's treated with NSAIDs?
Non-steroidal.
Anti-inflammatories.
Thank you. And rest, which helps. But he's looking for exercises to reinforce the muscles and avoid surgery for another 30 years.
So my best guess is that Cam dislocated his patellas or his kneecaps wrestling. That would be a common mechanism yeah. of injury. It's pretty yeah. difficult to actually truly dislocate your knee, your tibial femoral joint.
Oh, yeah.
So it's probably his yeah. patellas. And he says he feels like they're giving way, I believe, at the end of the day. My best guess is he's got some fatigue in the muscles that typically control his patella, like his quads, and needs some good strengthening for that, along with some balance and proprioception.
Yeah. You know, if he hasn't been seen, you know, for 20 years when he dislocated them, you know, that put him in the mid-30s to 40, it'd probably be a good time to go in and have a tune-up, mm-hmm. Especially if he is in a line of work that is manual labor. He says after working too hard, it'd probably be good to go in and just have a tune-up, to go in, take a look, look at the stability of his kneecaps, look at the stability of his knees right now. And the fact that he dislocated both of them makes me wonder if he has an underlying hypermobility.
Or a congenital deformity or in his trochlea or something like that.
Or his congenital deformity, yes, exactly. Say that again five times fast.
Yeah. I'm sure you can. We'll just skip it, though.
So I'd go in and see somebody, one or two visits with a physical therapist to take a look at the entire lower quarter from hips down to the floor and see if there's anything that Cam should be doing to prevent problems for the next 30 years, as he suggested. So again, given that mechanism of injury 20 years ago, I'd say he needs someone to give a quick look at him again before jumping into some kind of strengthening program.
Agreed.
And you suggest you go right to a physical therapist?
Okay. Yes. And again, you can see a physical therapist directly. If there's a clinic that you know you want to go to, particularly someone here that specializes in orthopedics or sports, call the clinic and say, "This, you know, I'm Cam. This is my insurance. Can I come and see a physical therapist directly?" And the clinic will be able to tell you.
Great. Thank you. And good luck, of course, with that. Let's go to Bobby in Menominee. Hi, Bobby.
Yes. My interest is for those of us who are in the early years of Medicare and are finding the inevitable or perhaps predictable decline in function. I think you addressed the questions on arthritis and what's needed, but my question is how to find a good physical therapist. I understand there are board-certified physical therapists. Does it make a difference? And if so, what would I look for? I'm particularly interested in a program that will give me exercises. I live on a farm, so aquatics are not a possibility, and I can't go to a gym every week.
Sure.
or certainly not every day.
Sure. That's an excellent question. And you are correct. There are specialists in physical therapy, and I'm so impressed that you know that.
Exactly.
There are geriatric mm-hmm. clinical specialists, people who specialize in treating the aging population. Someone like you would be the perfect candidate to see a geriatric clinical specialist. You are being proactive in your care. You want to make sure that you maintain your good health. If you do have comorbidities other than arthritis, a geriatric clinical specialist will be someone who will understand those and can address all those issues and design you an exercise program that you can do at home.
Mm-hmm. So geriatric specialists, and if there are no geriatric specialists in your area, then I would look for an orthopedic clinical specialist, because this is an orthopedic issue. There are more orthopedic clinical specialists than geriatric.
Yes.
So in terms of the total numbers, so I don't know if there's someone in your area, but I bet you can find that out on the
WPTA website. Yep. If you go to WPTA.org, there's an area that says, it says
find
for the consumer, find my physical therapist.
Yeah.
You should be able to type in your zip code and things should pop up for you who are members of the professional mm-hmm. association, and you should be able to contact them that way.
Yep.
Okay. Great.
Great questions, Bobby.
Yes. Thank you very much, Bobby. Let's go to Barb in Lafarge. Hi, Barb.
Hi. I have a question about my husband. About 6 weeks ago, he fell against a rock and got a bone bruise on his hip, and I felt that it was pretty big. It was about 6 inches square. He's gone to his physician, and there's no break or anything. But this doesn't seem to be resolving, and I wondered if a TENS unit would help.
How old is your husband, Barb?
72, and he still rides his bike like 30 miles a day.
Oh, good for him.
Excellent.
That's excellent.
So, that doesn't bother it.
Right.
What bothers it, it's messed up his gait, so he can't, you know, walking is really crooked, and it's really icky. And we tried heat, and we tried ice.
Yeah.
Neither one of them seemed to do a lot of good. It is getting smaller, but he's very impatient with this whole thing, and I wondered about a TENS unit.
So the issue is, when you say it's not resolving, it's the bruise itself or his ability to walk?
That really hasn't changed, but it's the bruise itself. I think it's only about half resolved.
Okay. You know, the bruise will resolve when it resolves. You know, I probably wouldn't lose a lot of sleep over how fast is the bruise resolving. That being said, the magnitude of the bruise is somewhat telling of the magnitude of the injury. So the fact that he is still walking with a limp, I'd say he needs to be seen. I'd want him to be seen. He may have a glute med tear. Mm-hmm. He may have had a gluteal muscle tear from its attachment on the hip joint itself, right where he hit. You have a number of muscles that attach there. If he had a big bruise, it may not have been just the skin and the capillaries in the area. It may have been a deeper muscle damage that you should know about and need some specific rehabilitation.
Yeah, I agree. It's a great strategy to make sure that there wasn't a fracture, and that's part of the reason I asked your husband's age, is because mm-hmm. as we know, as we age, we're at greater risk for fracture, and it's wonderful that he had x-rays and that's all clear, but soft tissue injuries can many times take longer to heal.
Much longer.
Than a fracture, and as Lori said, you know, he sounds like he's a pretty healthy 73-year-old, if he's biking 30 miles a day, you would think that he'd be kind of turning the corner, so I would agree it'd be worth seeing somebody.
But back to your original question about the TENS unit, TENS unit is designed to help control pain. So I think given your husband's background, if he's limping, it's for a real reason. It's not just that he has pain, but there's something producing the pain that needs to be addressed.
Okay. Thank you very much, Barb. Appreciate that call. Let's go to Annie in La Crosse. Hi, Annie. Oh, another biking injury.
Hello. Yeah, about 8 years ago, I fell off my bike and banged up my knee pretty bad. It was just tissue injury. Got swollen, you know, put ice on it, took it to the doctor. Everything's fine, doesn't hurt. The swelling never went down, not all of it. I mean, most of it, but not all of it. Otherwise, I'm in really good shape. I'm 68 years old. Every so often in that knee, I get the feeling or the sensation of cold or ice water trickling inside. It seems like inside the fleshy area. There's never any pain or anything, but this is a very strange sensation. It's like ice water, and it doesn't happen all the time, and it doesn't happen like for a long time, but it's incidental, and I was wondering what that is all about.
Does that sensation happen when you're doing the same thing? Is it always with your knee bent or always with your knee straight or always?
No, it just happens. There's... It's just there and then it's gone.
And when you say the swelling is never gone, where's the swelling?
The swelling is around my knee. It feels like there's a cushion of something in there, like on the side, on the inside of my knee, on the inside leg part of my knee and above my knee, but it doesn't hurt. It's just not, my knee doesn't look as bony as my other knee because it's swollen.
And when you fell, how did you land?
I have no idea. Oh. It was really fast. I know is I fell off my bike and I hit my knee and my knee got huge, like bang, it swelled. And luckily I was able to put ice on it right away and a friend came and took me to the emergency room and I mean, nothing was dislocated or broken or anything, and I've never had any pain with it. It's just the swelling has never gone all the way down.
Huh. So, and you had an x-ray, but nothing else?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But no MRI or anything looking at soft tissue?
No, I don't think
so. Okay, all right. Well, it sounds neurovascular to me, and whether you hit a nerve that's never completely recovered, and every once in a while it sends a funny signal into your knee like ice. You know, on the inside of your knee, you have the saphenous nerve, mm-hmm. and it could be a saphenous nerve issue, or it could be lymph too, something that's controlling the lymph flow to and from your knee could have been damaged at the time of your fall.
Right. I was thinking of saphenous nerve, especially when she said that she gets her swelling on the inside of the knee.
Right.
I'm wondering if that swelling occasionally occludes or pinches her saphenous nerve. And then mm-hmm. she gets those sensations.
Yeah.
There's actually a treatment technique you can do to kind of glide your saphenous nerve a little bit.
Yeah, I can see if that helps or reproduce it. You can Google it.
Yeah.
Saphenous is saphenous. No F, saph.
It's saph.
Right. That's what I said.
Isn't it an? No, it's en.
En. OUS.
Fine, you're right. You're older.
Google will correct it anyway.
Google will correct it anyway.
But there's look for saphenous nerve flossing. Right. Give that a try.
And that may help because that effusion, that swelling may be just kind of irritating that nerve. Yeah. That would be my first thought.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting feeling. I don't know if I'd
right.
like it.
Exactly.
Let's go to Douglas County and Marty. Hi, Marty.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. I think we need to start a club. My 70-pound dog and full bore into my knee last year. So we're going to start a little club of dogs.
Yes. Oh, my
crazy
connections. But
I've
that's
been
not
there.
Why I'm calling. About 2 years ago, I started getting a lot of really bad headaches related to posture. I've been throwing pots for 40 years and began some physical therapy to correct shoulder and neck issues. About the same time, my thyroid medication was out of whack. I was having extreme over-medicated thyroid symptoms.
Oh,
my concurrent with all of this, I started getting a tingling in my neck and arms and upper body. My doctor thought that it was related to the over-medication. Once they got the medication straightened out, this tingling went away, but now it comes and goes. It has continued for 2 years, coming and going. I think it's related to some of the exercises I'm doing with PT, pulling the shoulder blades together and down, just kind of moving, mobilizing muscles and parts of my body that had been rather ignored over a 40-year period of time. I'm getting it lately. It's come back periodically. It's in my neck, as I said, arms, little bit in my hands. Sometimes it almost feels like I'm being stung by mosquitoes, bit by mosquitoes, but it's mostly like a tingling. During the night, it calms down as the day wears on, and by the end of the day is when it's going to be its worst.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it just kind of comes and goes.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're going to ask if I see that, if I'm doing anything that I think might be causing it. I don't know. I don't really know what might be causing it.
Well, that's a pretty classic
cervical spine.
Oh, cervical spine.
It's neck.
Yeah, yes. And I mean, it calms down at night when your neck no longer has to hold up your 14-pound head. And so
and
you feel better.
You're unloaded. Your joints are unloaded.
You're unloaded, yeah. And then you get up in the morning and you feel pretty good. And as your neck has to hold up your head all day long, especially if you're leaning over a pottery wheel, then by the end of the day, your neck starts talking to you. So those are fairly classic cervical spine symptoms. So I don't know when you saw your PT last, but you may need to retool your physical therapy exercises that you're doing for your neck. If you're doing a lot of pottery, you know what you may want to, and I'm just saying may want to, think about some support for your neck, a cervical collar or something to rest your neck in the middle of the day, or even laying down for 20 or 30 minutes in the afternoon to offload your neck so that you can make it through the rest of your day. But typically what we would do is some strengthening of the muscles that hold your head up so that they can hold your head up for longer periods of time without aggravating your cervical spine.
And you had mentioned that you're doing some scapular shoulder blade exercises, and those are ideal exercises. What some patients do sometimes is when they do those exercises, they actually compensate and put their neck in a funky position. And so it might be that you're focusing so hard on where your shoulder blade should be that your neck is in a position that could be irritating it. So I agree with Lori. I think a little tune-up would be good for you because we want to keep you throwing pots.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you, Marty. Let's go to Conrad in Brookfield. Hi, Conrad.
Hello. I have a similar issue like the person that emailed falling on the steps and possible problem with his rotator cuff. Should I see my question is, should I see my GP or should I see my orthopedic physical assistant?
Okay. Did you fall on the steps too?
No. I was hiking and...
Did you get run in by your dog?
Oh, or did you get hit by a dog? Yeah. No.
No dog. No.
So you were hiking?
I was hiking and slipped on the gravelly downhill and I used my right arm to support my fall or break my fall.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's a similar thing, I think.
And how long ago was that?
About 8 weeks.
Yeah. Getting better, getting worse, staying the same?
It's staying the same.
Okay. It's time.
Oh, nice.
Sorry.
Yeah,
it's time.
Perfect. Yeah, I can see your PT.
Well, and he's an orthopedic PA.
PA. I thought,
Yeah, I would either see a physical therapist or your orthopedics PA would be great choices.
Yep.
I think either can triage you just fine. If the physical therapist sees you and thinks you need imaging, you can be sent to the PA. If the PA sees you and thinks you need PT, he'll send you back.
Yeah, yeah, but it's time to get to do something because it's clearly not going to get better on its own.
Okay.
Good luck.
Yeah, good luck, Conrad. Well, we're going to have to go to a break real quick, but we did have Lois who sent an email to us asking, does anyone in the UW health system use muscle energy technique as a form of PT? Are you familiar with that?
Yes. Muscle energy technique is where you put a muscle at length and you have it contract to kind of move a bone if you have what we'd call a bony biomechanical, what's the word I'm looking for? Male alignment, lack of a better term. Yes, okay. many physical therapists are trained in muscle energy technique.
Yeah, it's one of many techniques that PTs have in their toolbox. And so when they examine a patient, they'll pick whichever ones seem most suitable for that scenario.
Okay. Is that something that's fairly well known?
I mean, it is among orthopedic physical therapists.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Our guests today are Jill Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill is a associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today. We are going to be back right after the news. And later on today, at 2 o'clock, Kathleen Dunn and her guest are going to talk about the Civilian Conservation Corps and the huge role it played in helping to establish parks and forests throughout Wisconsin. And please give us a call, the number 800-642-1234. And we'll be back. Hope you can join us. It's great to have you along with us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller today. Our guests are Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum. Jill is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at the UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. They're with us today to answer your questions about physical therapy. So join us by calling 1-800-642-1234 or by posting on our Facebook page. It's the Larry Mueller Show. And just a reminder, Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. Well, thanks again for being with us, Lori and Jill. And Jill, before we get back to the phones, you said you had a shout out to...
Yes, I wanted to give a shout out to one of your listeners. You have such incredible listeners.
Don't we?
With Larry's show and all of your shows. But one of a gentleman who called in, I don't know, maybe 3 or 4 times ago, had lost a great deal of weight, almost half of his body weight. And he had called in because another person, do you remember him? Mm-hmm. Another person had called in and wanted to know if physical therapy would help tighten skin if you'd lost a great deal of weight. And Randy had called in and said, no, there's a surgeon in town. But Randy was so passionate about the fact that I believe he had been on 23 medications and exercise and lifestyle change had gotten him off all of his medications. And he was so passionate about kind of what physical therapy did for him and nutrition and this kind of wellness change he made in his life that he had sent us pictures and emailed us, and he actually volunteered to come and talk to the physical therapy students at the University of Wisconsin. So he came and spoke to our students about just his lifestyle changes and how it's become a permanent change in his behavior and how this all happened. And it was really awe-inspiring to hear it from someone who's been through it and maintained his health and on that side of things. So a big shout out to Randy for coming in and volunteering his time to talk to the physical therapy students about that.
Yes, exactly. Absolutely. That was wonderful. Well, let's go to the phones for these wonderful listeners who've been waiting for such a long time. Kathy in Duluth is first. Hi, Kathy.
Yes, hi. I'm 66-year-old, very active. A year ago, I was diagnosed with some early osteoarthritic changes in both knees. And since then, I've developed this, it sort of feels like a clicking sensation on my left hip. Looking at my anatomy books, it would be where the greater trochanter of the femur is.
I love the fact that you have an anatomy book.
I know. I know. That's awesome.
I'm an OT.
Oh!
So anyway, I talked to a PT friend, and he thought it sounded like a problem with the piriformis muscle, and he showed me some stretches, but it's just not really yielding any significant improvement. So
you were wondering, like, there's something moving over that bone, like your greater over the greater trochanter?
That's what it feels like.
Sure. Well, there probably, is.
It's probably your IT band.
Your iliotibial
it's
band.
Probably your iliotibial band.
And it does.
Sliding over it.
Yeah, it does move over it as you walk. It moves. It changes the axis of rotation. Changes as you move your hip, where the axis of rotation stays the same. But as you go forward and back, the iliotibial band passes back and forth over your greater trochanter, kind of like a little bowstring. And so that's part of what gives people trochanteric bursitis,
exactly,
is the iliotibial band snapping back and forth across. So we have people stretch the iliotibial band. So that's where I'd go next.
That'd be the first thing I would do. And the thing that I would probably do in concert with that is make sure that her gluteus medius and her hip, those lateral hip muscles are very strong, because if you're dropping your hip a little bit, that will cause that IT band tightness. So looking at your gait mechanics and making sure that your gluteus medius on both sides are very strong will be very important, especially because you have knee OA. You want to keep that alignment really good.
So have that PT friend watch you walk, check your gluteal strength, not necessarily the stretching of your piriformis, but the strengthening, and get you on an exercise program for that.
Right.
Okay. Kathy, a question for you real quick. Does that happen when you're on, like, all the time or just occasionally?
Occasional.
Okay. Because I have the same thing. I was just curious.
Kathy, are you still working?
No, I just retired last spring.
Oh, congratulations.
Good for you. Good for you. So you want to tackle this and get on a walking program and be healthy. So, yeah, it'll be really important for you to do that. I just think it's amazing that you have an anatomy book at home.
I
love that.
I know.
I don't have an anatomy book at home.
Don't you?
No.
Oh, I do.
Oh, do you? Oh, no.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to James in Fountain City. James, do you have an anatomy book at home?
I need an anatomy book.
What's going on, James?
68 years old, extremely active, pulled a muscle in my right shoulder cutting firewood back in April, and went to see a doctor. He referred me to physical therapy. They gave me a steroid shot. They checked me out. They said it wasn't. Rotator cuff was not torn. All the movement was adequate. So they gave me a steroid shot, and, of course, I'm extremely active. Immediately went up to Boundary Waters for a week. not letting things heal. But I went through the physical therapy. I think it's called dry needle stimulation.
Yep.
Did a couple of those, some deep massage stuff. Wasn't really getting a lot of success with it. Went and saw an acupuncture 5 times. Maybe a little bit of improvement, but not noticeable. And then some deep muscle massage stuff. This thing is not leaving me, and it's causing me problems with sleeping, because I tend to sleep on my right side, and I'm awakened in the middle of the night with just an aching pain. And I'm wondering, is the next step an MRI?
No.
We are both looking at each other and concerned that this is coming from your neck. So you had mentioned you had a shoulder injury. What did you do? It was chopping the firewood?
Just working hard, lifting, running, chainsaw.
So it could be the position of your shoulder, but it could have very well been the
could
position of your neck.
Been your neck and the vibration. Necks don't like that vibration.
Right.
Typically for your shoulder, I mean, if you quote unquote pulled a muscle, you know, that's going to get better. A steroid shot, some physical therapy, you really should get better in the absence of I fell and tore my rotator cuff. So the fact that this isn't getting better tells me that someone needs to look someplace else. So I wouldn't, if I was going to MRI anything, it'd be my neck and probably not your shoulder. So we're thinking someone should be looking elsewhere for the problem, because your shoulder should be better by now.
Right.
You've done the right things.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you very much, James. Let's look at an email, or actually Facebook. Sue on Facebook wants to know how you feel about inverted exercise tables.
Great.
Sure.
I love them.
Yeah.
As long as you don't have blood pressure issues or head, vascular, eye issues.
Correct. We use them. We have one in the athletic department, and We use them.
Excellent. All right, then let's go to the email from Dory. She says, I have very high arches, and over time, the muscles in my feet have become very tight. She saw a foot surgeon who said there was no PT to help and did a gas rock slide on the worst foot. It was better for a time, but has tightened back up. Is it true that PT cannot help her?
So she had a gas rock. Sounds like she had a gas rock lengthening. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because those usually don't happen unless you have some sort of neurological condition.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the surgery. So the question, can PT cannot help? So can PT lengthen your muscles? You know, there's research that shows that prolonged stretching can lengthen musculotendinous tissue.
Or serial casting.
Or serial casting, right. It's the kind of the same idea. So, yes, it can. At this point in the game, that's probably not something you're going to do. What physical therapy would probably offer someone like you is examination of the joints above and below. So we'd look at your toes. We'd look at your heel and your lower leg. We'd look at your knee and your hips to see if we can compensate for that tightness elsewhere. So, you know, why are they tight? You know, I don't know. I would want to figure out why they're so tight.
Correct.
And why they haven't responded to traditional kinds of stretching or traditional kinds of interventions. If you haven't seen a physical therapist who specializes in foot and ankle, that might be a place to go too. But, you know, when you say physical therapy cannot help, I'm not sure help with what.
Right.
You know, is it painful with the tightness, with pain with walking? It's hard to know what you're wanting help with. So I would actually consult a physical therapist and not rely on someone else saying PT can't help. I would see a PT and ask them, can you help me? And the PT would say yes or no.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Sounds good. Let's go back to those phones. First up is Jeff in Park Falls. Hi, Jeff.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
Work, I stand for my whole shift at a table, and I'm having problems now with my thigh. It feels like it's on fire, and my muscle on the side of my leg, it feels like a stabbing pain. I just wonder if there's any other exercises I could do to help that.
So you basically stand still at a table for 9 hours a day?
Yeah.
That's very hard on your body.
Are you standing with the side of your leg against the table, or your leg leaning up against the table?
No, just standing facing the table.
Okay.
So my concern is that this is coming from your back. This sounds like that static, that stasis, not moving around is very hard on you. And my concern is you're getting some radicular symptoms. I think you said it was burning.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great word to describe nerve pain, which makes me think it's coming from your lumbar spine.
Right. Yeah. So I would take a look at it. It's just one side.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the outside of my leg.
Yeah, just one leg though, right?
Pardon?
Just one leg?
Well, it's mostly in the right leg, a little bit in the left, but mostly in the right.
Okay. Does it bother you at other times of day or just at work?
Well, lately now, since I've been, like, I come home and cut the grass, it kind of bothers me now too.
Okay. All right. That's possible. Are you on a statin drug by chance for cholesterol?
No.
Okay. All right. So I would have a visit or two with a physical therapist, as Jill has suggested, to see, have someone take a look at you and see if they can find out where the pain is coming from. So, you know, unless you've had a change in activity, a new injury or something like this, you've been doing this job for how long?
Months now.
What's that?
For about 10 months.
About 10 months. Okay, so it is still a relatively new thing. It's not like you've been doing it for 10 years. So the question is, why is it bothering you now? Has something changed? So having someone take a look at you, examine your thigh, your hip, and your low back to see if they can make some suggestions for you, I think would be great, particularly if you're going to stick with this job.
Exactly.
Okay, great. Let's go to Pat in Antigo. Hi, Pat.
Hi. Thanks so much for mentioning the word needs today, because it just grabbed my attention. I've been so fortunate. I'm 65, never had any knee problem. Oh, maybe about 6 months ago, I probably overdid it. with my new. I know I overdid it. It was a very brief situation of running through some heavy, wet, granular snow, and I could tell my knees were going to hurt. But they're both very different. In my left knee, and this is the one that it just drives me crazy. When I kneel on it, I hit something that just literally sends me through the ceiling. I don't know what it is. I can adjust where I'm kneeling on my knee. It wouldn't be where I normally kneel, but as soon as I adjust my knee, it's completely gone. I can kneel for hours.
You probably have some arthritis underneath your kneecap, and when you kneel down on it and you catch that spot, you think about the back of your kneecap, there are probably places that have more arthritis. When they do MRIs or different imaging, they look at the undersurface of your kneecap and they'll say arthritis in this area or not that area. So chances are when you kneel down and you have that terrible pain, you're hitting probably two arthritic spots right up against each other. And then when you shift your weight bearing to a non-arthritic part, then you feel fine.
Okay. Well,
Does that make sense to you?
Well, yeah. As soon as you say arthritis, too, because that's definitely a part of this whole situation that's going on in my body. I know it's getting bad. Especially in my neck, but this is my knees. So the other knee, then it just doesn't seem to have the stamina. And once again, I can rub it, I can ice it, and I can feel as though okay, that's great. But the stamina in the knee is gone, and it just starts to ache, slowly ache. And I'm not willing to say okay, well then just stop doing things, because I know that. A bad thing.
Right. Good for you.
Yeah,
good
exactly.
Well, as that arthritis kind of comes on, and it sounds like you may have it in multiple joints, that's not uncommon. We do need to perform strengthening exercises and mobility exercises to keep up, as you so kindly referred to, the stamina. So if you haven't seen a physical therapist for this, it would be a really good time to get on kind of a whole body strength and conditioning program to keep your joints mobile and to make sure you have adequate strength and balance so you don't have to give up those activities that you like to do. So 1, 2, maybe 3 visits with a PT to kind of get you on a program. You can do some activities for your neck as well and get all of that kind of under control so you can continue with their activities would be a great idea.
Okay, good luck, Pat. Appreciate that call. We want to go back to, I think it was an email from Jerry from Prairie du Chien. He recently had a reassessment of his right knee. Same diagnosis as a number of years ago, arthritic knees, bone on bone, candidate for surgery. Now, there isn't any pain. However, he's really becoming more limited in walking, kneeling, getting up and down. He wears a knee brace almost daily. Now, he can't take ibuprofen or naproxen. Are there PT solutions to help, or should he schedule surgery?
Oh, that's a great question. Mm-hmm. We see a lot of people who walk in the clinic with that question where they say, well, the doctor says whenever I'm ready for that knee replacement, I should just call and schedule it. And the question is, when should you schedule that? When do you decide to have it done? And, you know, typically they say when the bad days are winning,
right.
You know, when you have more bad days than good days.
Makes sense.
Interestingly, Jerry doesn't have any pain. And typically what happens is people say, I can't stand the pain anymore.
Right.
So his is a little bit different situation, but the becoming more limited is also an important factor. And when you find your world becoming smaller and smaller because of your knee issue, then that might be a time to have it done as well. Now, that being said, are there PT solutions? Absolutely. Physical therapy can help you to strengthen, to, as we've said multiple times in this show, to help take some of the load off of the knee joint itself. They can look at how he gets up and down from the floor, gets in and out of a chair, his walking gait, to see if using walking poles might assist him and lengthen the amount of time that he walks. Because even if he does have surgery, the better shape he's in before surgery,
right,
the faster his recovery is going to be.
Absolutely.
So you don't want your world to become so small in terms of your activity that it actually puts you at risk of having a more challenging outcome from the surgery.
Right. I hear a lot of patients say, well, I don't want to waste time with physical therapy if I'm just going to have surgery anyway. And the the answer is you're not wasting time. You're just conditioning yourself for that surgery. So on the other side, you get better more quickly. Mm-hmm. So it's not a waste at all. And like Lori said, you may be able to prolong your time before surgery, 3, 6 months, even a year. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely worth a try.
If you can put off surgery, that's always the best. Yep. So, okay, let's go back to the phones. We have got Rona, I believe it is, in Rice Lake.
Hello.
Hi, Rona. What's your question?
Hi. My name is Rana.
Sorry, Rana. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Well, I'm 53 years old. I've had both my knees replaced because they just wore out. Now my right hip was giving me trouble, and I went in to see the orthopedic surgeon, and he looked at some x-rays, and he said, you have a genetic defect in your hip that doesn't rotate right. And it's always given me some trouble over the years, but as I'm maturing, it's getting worse. So
I like that word.
Yeah, I hate the O word. So what I'm trying to figure out, you know, I'm going to guess a considerable amount of this is genetics. My father had some issues, and my grandfather definitely had some issues. But how much of this is possibly genetic, and how much of it is environmental?
65% genetic, they would say.
Yeah, that's a great question.
Yeah. You inherit your connective tissue from your parents and from their parents. So how much of it you get from dad, how much of you get from mom, how much of it you get from grandma, how much of you get it from great-grandpa is hard to say because that's the role of the genetic dice. But estimates are that up to 65% of that, in terms of arthritis, is heritable because of the connective tissue makeup.
So a good portion of it, you know, you mentioned that your father had it, grandfather had it, so that's probably from them. Is there an environmental component? Of course, depending mm-hmm. on what you do for a living, how your joint is aligned, how you manage your weight, mm-hmm. how you use your joint, all of that is that other 35%.
Yeah, there you go.
I had to do math in my head.
Oh, my goodness.
Okay, great. Thank you, Rana. We appreciate that call. Let's go to Randy in Rice Lake. Hi, Randy.
Hi. I am on my second, I've just had my second hip operation 2.5 months ago. The first one is excellent. No deterioration since that. I'm a big bike rider. I have great pain resilience, so both of these hips really deteriorated to the maximum before the doc gave me the hip operations. Now, the left hip, which is the one I just had, the muscles are very, very atrophied. I can ride 20 miles a day right now, no problem. I'm doing that every other day. Can I use I do the bikes and I do the elliptical. Is it too much stress for me to start doing the stepper? I've avoided that because I consider that more impact. And what else could I do to develop that left leg muscle tissue?
I appreciate that you're doing all this cardiovascular conditioning and using your hip functionally. I think what I would do before I do anything else is you need a specific hip strengthening program. You need to do isolated hip muscle strengthening. That's the one thing that the kind of the missing component for you. So the cardiovascular work is great, and you will get some strengthening with that, but you need isolated hip strengthening. And
right.
You're pretty high level. It sounds to me like you would need some very specific exercises from a physical therapist.
Right, exactly. So you have that general strengthening where you're using the muscles functionally, as Jill said. But what we see often is that if you have weakness in a specific muscle group, you change the mechanics of how you do that, and that actually tends to overload the joint itself. So I would start with specific isolated strengthening and someone looking at how you're doing those things to make sure you're doing them correctly.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Randy, for that question. We've been speaking with Jill Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, or did I say Jill twice?
You did, but that's okay. I'm that fabulous.
Right. One's yeah, Lori, so one's good. Jill. Oh, you know, yeah. I just like the word Jill. Like, I can't.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, exactly. So. She's got some bias there. I think.
We want to thank Michelle Good for on-air production and Dave Potraz for technical direction. Coming up at tomorrow, actually, we're going to be talking to the author of the book. Come, let me guide you. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Miller. Thank you for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.